graduating from college generally comes with the payoff of earning more money in a career that you actually want. But the cost is so high that some never really consider it. Well, would you reconsider it if I told you that there was free money just sitting on the table for you? Welcome to the Just Dumb Enough podcast, a show that acknowledges no one is always an expert by dispelling misconceptions with real experts. I'm your host as always, Colton Petrie. My guest today is Sean Patel. Dr. Patel is founder and CEO of PrepExpert.com. He came from humble beginnings, studying for the SATs in a public library because it was free. After a perfect SAT score, he went on to research the ways in which other students could achieve the success he had found. Now, he helps parents and students discover that college doesn't have to be expensive if you just figure out the system. And if that's not enough evidence for you to believe him, you should know that his business partner is Mark Cuban. Let's go to college for free. Welcome to the show, Sean Patel.
Hi, Colton. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so excited to have you on the show. Why don't you introduce yourself a little bit for the audience?
Yeah, so my name's Dr. Sean Patel, and I'm the founder and CEO of PrepExpert.com. I've helped over 100,000 students through PrepExpert improve their SAT and ACT scores, get into the nation's top universities, but most importantly, win over $100 million in college scholarships. And so that's really kind of what I spend my days on. I'm also a board certified dermatologist and I do teledermatology, but that's more just to keep my diagnostic skills and licensing up. I spend the majority of my time now on PrepExpert and running the company as the CEO.
Fantastic. I mean, what got you into that?
Yeah, so I never wanted to actually start a test prep company. That was not my vision or dream. But it really came out of my own experience. So what I mean by that is when I was in high school, I was probably like many of the parents and students listening to this podcast, in that I was a good student, but I was not a great standardized test taker. I had a lot of test anxiety. I went to urban public schools in one of the worst school districts in the nation in Las Vegas, Nevada. We had a 40% high school dropout rate. And I didn't know the first thing about test prep, college admissions, scholarships, any of that. And so on the very first SAT that I ever took, I only scored around average. I then spent hundreds of hours in the library studying for the SAT, was eventually able to raise my SAT score to a perfect score, which is something that only 0.02% of all students achieve. This opened up great opportunities in terms of college admissions, scholarships, et cetera. And so when I got to college, I wanted to help other students improve their test scores the way that I did. And all I really wanted to do was write a book. But when I pitched my book out to 100 literary agents and publishers, every single one said that that test prep market is too competitive, that I didn't have a platform to write such a book. And so I turned all that curriculum and content that I was writing for the book into a course. And in the very first six-week SAT course that I ever taught, my students had an average SAT score improvement of 376 points. So that was pretty incredible. It's equivalent of taking students from the 50th percentile to the 90th percentile. So of course, I had parents and students who wanted more courses. So over the past 13 years at PrepExpert, we've now helped over 100,000 students through our SAT courses, ACT courses, college admissions consulting that we do online.
Which is awesome. I mean, that's number one, a huge improvement. Like you said, a very competitive market. I mean, everyone is looking to try and get help on these because I think the SAT is like, you know, this mythical thing where everyone's like, this is the test, like the test.
Yeah. I think, it's probably the most famous standardized test of all time. I think there, because of that, there's a lot of people who are intimidated by it, who think that they can't score well. But I was one of those students. I barely scored above average on my first test. And then I learned a lot of the strategies and techniques to raise my own score. And that's what I try to help students and our tutors try to help students do, is teach hundreds of techniques, strategies, and insights in order to become better standardized test takers. A lot of people think, oh, I'm just not good at testing. But imagine if you were an entrepreneur and you said, well, I'm just not good at being an entrepreneur the first time you tried it, right? It's probably not going to work out for you. So you've got to practice, you've got to learn skills, learn techniques, learn strategies, and eventually you'll become better at testing or entrepreneurship or whatever it may be.
So for those unfamiliar, when we're talking about these, what are the SATs and what's the difference between that and an ACT?
Yeah, so the SAT is the College Admissions Entrance Exam. So for many colleges, they require either the SAT or the ACT, as you mentioned. So the ACT is a very similar exam, although there are some nuances and differences. For example, the ACT has a science section as well as an essay, whereas the SAT does not have those sections. It just tests math, reading, and writing skills. Now, one important caveat to point out is some colleges, due to the pandemic, have gone test optional, meaning that it's optional for students to submit these test scores. However, I still highly recommend taking these exams for college admissions because there's a lot of data and research out there that shows that students who have test scores are accepted at higher rates than students who do not have test scores. On top of that, by getting a high SAT or ACT score, you don't need to take both exams, although some students do in high school. You can be eligible for a lot of college scholarships. So many of my students have gotten $1.4 million, $500,000, $250,000, $100,000 college scholarships, which is really helpful given how expensive college has become. And then the third reason that you should still take the exams is there's a huge movement now back towards requiring SATs and ACTs. Most recently, Harvard, Yale, MIT, Dartmouth, Brown, University of Texas at Austin, and dozens of other universities have reinstated these standardized tests as requirements, and they're no longer optional.
Very interesting. Yeah, I was wondering, when this was necessary. And it sounds like even if it wasn't, required by the college you were looking at, it's really beneficial to do it just for the sake that, you might qualify for a lot of scholarship money.
Yeah, and that's what I think most people miss out on is they really associate this with college admissions. But my mission actually is really I'm on a $1 billion scholarship mission to help students reduce or eliminate their college costs. So over the past 10 years at Prep Expert, we've helped students win over 100 million in college scholarships. But over the next 10 years, I want to 10x that and help students win over $1 billion in college scholarships. And so the way to really do that is to get high test scores and then apply for these colleges that offer what are called merit-based scholarships. So those are scholarships based on your academic merit. That's your grades and your test scores. And one full tuition scholarship is often worth $100,000 to $200,000. So the numbers add up pretty quickly.
Fantastic. Well, and it sounds like this is kind of the easy way to, qualify for some of those because you might get good grades, but on their own, they might not stand out.
Yeah, and so that's the biggest problem, and why I think many colleges are reinstating the SAT or the ACT is because there's been a, everyone talks about inflation in the news, but no one talks about grade inflation. So over the past 20 years, there's been massive grade inflation in schools. Now, 47%, so almost half of all graduating high school seniors graduate with an A average. So, if half of all students have a 4.0 GPA, it's really hard to differentiate which students should be accepted into colleges, especially the more competitive colleges, as well as which students should get scholarships. And that's why the test scores make such a big difference, probably bigger than ever before.
Yeah, I mean, if they didn't have these tests, what do you look at? Like, what does an admissions board look at to say, like, okay, well, everyone has a 4.0, so you just like draw numbers from a hat?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting, thought experiment, which is what would college admissions committees look at if they don't have a test score and everyone has a 4.0? Well, the answer is extracurricular activities. So they're going to look at what you're doing outside of high school. Now, some people will say, well, that's a great thing. However, who can afford the best extracurricular activities, meaning go to the best summer programs, start nonprofit organizations, do sports like water polo and lacrosse? Typically, it's not going to be the students in inner cities. It's going to be your wealthier families. So I know that the big detractors of standardized tests will say, well, only the wealthy can afford tutors and test prep companies like myself at prepexpert.com. However, I actually think that extracurricular activities disadvantage low-income students even more because at least with the SAT or the ACT, any student can go check out books for free from the library and self-study their way to a high score and learn the skills. That's actually what I did. So you can do it for free at low cost, literally with books. But you can't do that with extracurricular activities or, essays that, the best college admissions consultants I've heard have charge up to, $250,000, $500,000 to help students with their essays and applications. So I actually think people have it wrong when they say standardized tests are more biased towards the wealthy. It's actually extracurricular activities.
Yeah, and I mean that makes sense because you, like you said, who can throw the most amount of expendable money at all of these side projects? It's not going to be the person that needs to study for free.
Yeah, exactly. So, super interesting data that's coming out. And I think that's really why, Yale, Harvard, Dartmouth, all of these schools actually just came out and said, by removing test scores for the past few years and making them optional, it actually disadvantaged low income and underprivileged students the most. And that speaks a lot to what I was just talking about with extracurricular activities being overvalued for wealthy families. I know not anyone probably loves the SAT or the ACT, but they are a necessary evil that actually evens the playing field more so than any other metric.
So, when you are studying for the SATs, and granted, I took the SATs or the PSATs, I think like a decade and a half ago, and
Me too.
I never took the rest of the testing. I was pretty average at best. What is on these tests? Like, what are the metrics you're trying to score well in?
Yeah, so there's really three main areas. So one is going to be math, so general math skills, so arithmetic, algebra, geometry, a little bit of trigonometry. Then with reading, it's going to be passage, like you read passages and then you answer questions about what the passage is about, main ideas, author's tone, that kind of thing. And then writing or English, so really grammar-based questions, punctuation, transitions, that kind of thing. So that's really the content. The problem with these tests is that many students do not learn a lot of the key skills you need to ace these exams in high school. So you would think that your high school math and your English classes would be enough. Now they give you a good core base, I guess, to answer these questions. But in order to be really effective, it's really important that you practice at these specific question types because it's likely that you haven't seen them in your regular high school English and math classes. So that's a little bit unfortunate, but I do understand teachers' kind of point of view on this and that they don't want to teach to the test. But that's really what we do at Prep Expert is we teach you exactly how to identify the answers more quickly, and we teach towards the test because we want students to score as high as possible to get into the best colleges, but more importantly, win the most scholarships.
Yeah, well, and it sounds like these are very, the way that these questions are worded or presented are probably very special compared to, a general comprehension where you're like, hey, I want you to know where to put a comma in a sentence and not like, well, tell me which one of these is correct.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that, people would consider quote unquote tricky. And it's not really tricky. What it is it's trying to differentiate between the top students and the average students and the bottom of the pool. And that's the whole point of a standardized test, really, right? And so it's not going to be easy for everyone. And the reason for that is they need to make that differentiating. Otherwise, it'll just end up like grades. As I mentioned, everyone's getting A's. And so how do you really know who's really the top of the class anymore?
So when you look at those categories, I mean, obviously a lot of people have come through Prep Expert. What is like, is there one general category that people struggle with most?
Yeah, I think the category that most students struggle with is going to be reading passage comprehension. And I think a lot of that actually has to do with generally in society what's happening, which is shorter attention spans. And so to be able to read, a long 750 word passage, that's about a subject you're not even that interested in, like literary works or sciences, makes it really difficult for students to stay focused. But I personally think it's really, really important that students learn this skill because when you go out into the workforce, you will have to do, or even if as an entrepreneur, you will have to do things that you don't always love doing. And that's just the reality of life. And you won't have, TikTok to, or you could have TikTok to distract you, but you won't be very good at your job. And so I personally think that a lot of the skills that you learn to effectively study for standardized tests, for example, hard work, delayed gratification, focus, turning off the technology, these are all skills that will serve you super well in your future career, both academically as well as in real life as you work for a company or work for yourself.
Is it one where you could increase your reading speed and that would help you to like, burn through the passage a couple of times in quick succession? Or is it better to like slow down and process every little bit of information, even if that's like an uncomfortably slow reading speed?
Yeah, great question. So it's a little bit of both. So you really have to find a balance, what I say in my courses, between comprehension and speed, because you don't want to read the passage so fast that you're not actually comprehending the main ideas or the key themes, but you also don't want to read it so slow that you're running out of time, right? And so it's really a balance that you need to practice. No one is perfect at it the first time they do it. And that's really what we try to teach students is like, let's find the ideal reading speed for the passages so that you're comprehending enough, but you're getting through them quickly enough. I actually think it's more important to spend more time not on the passage reading, but actually on the questions and the answer choices, because that's where, there's small nuances that you really need to understand. And so it's more important to read the answer choices and the questions more thoroughly, efficiently, and effectively than it is the passages themselves.
Gotcha. Because there's some people I've met where they're like, 750 words, I can do it in a minute. You're like, good. Did you read it or what happened just now?
I'm actually a slow reader myself, and people wouldn't think that, but I've definitely met those people that say they can read like an entire page of a novel in, a few seconds. And I think that that's not a great strategy, not only for reading novels, but also for standardized testing, because you comprehend very little typically.
Yeah. So when you're talking about, studying for the SATs, like you said, you kind of locked yourself into studying for hundreds of hours. How many hours per day for how long should kids be studying for these tests?
Yeah, so one of the things that I preach at Prep Expert in our SAT and ACT courses is you cannot procrastinate for the SAT or the ACT like you do for a typical high school test. I mean, I was just like every other high school student, I would procrastinate, study the week before, the day before, 2 days before a test. That does not work for the SAT or the ACT. So the way we've structured our courses is really the ideal format, which is to get started at least 6 to 8 weeks. So our courses are primarily 6 or 8 weeks before your official test date. Ideally, you get started even sooner, but this would be the, I would say the minimum amount of time you would need. And over that 6 or 8 weeks, we typically spend about 6 hours in class learning and then 2 to 3 hours of practice exams and 2 to 3 hours of homework. So that's almost 10 hours a week for 6 to 8 weeks. So that's 60 to 80 hours, I would say, is really what you need. Ideally would be 100, but 60 to 80 would be the minimum.
Okay. I mean, it's a lot of When people hear that, I'm sure they're like, oh, that's a lot of time. And you're like, well, I mean, it's a quarter of full time. Like, it's not so long, especially when you're talking about something that, dictates $500,000 in scholarships.
Yeah, and that's what I try to put into perspective is like it is an investment of time for anyone, of course, but the payoff could be tremendous, right? If you score high on the PSAT, you are automatically offered six-figure scholarships to over 100 universities. So let's just put that into perspective. If you study for 100 hours for the PSAT and you get a $100,000 college scholarship to 100 universities, I mean, that's literally $1,000 per hour that you're earning at each of those universities. I would, if I was, for the parents listening, if your employer told you that they're going to give you a two-hour test, and if you score well on that test, they'll give you a $100,000 bonus. Would you study 60, 80, 100 hours for it? My guess is you'll probably study far more.
Yeah, you're like, if I could cash out this check, I would study for the next year.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what I try to tell students is like the payoff is just so ginormous. It's worth putting in the time, effort, and energy.
So is this kind of like you would see a curve in learning if you said like, if you spend a week learning standardized test questions, you see a pretty sharp increase. And then if you see it for 6 weeks, like there's a very sharp increase, and then eventually, like you've figured out the test skill.
Yeah, there's definitely diminishing returns after, you're starting to get to those top scores. Usually what we try to do is get students in the 90th to the 99th percentile. So what that means on the SAT, just to give an example, would be the 99th percentile is typically around 1500 out of 1600. So you're 100 points away from a perfect score. After that, it's pretty difficult to, you have to get kind of lucky because you can only miss a few questions to get a perfect score. That's what I did. And I will admit, be the first person to admit, there were definitely two or three questions I was a little unsure about, but luckily they went my way. But once you get into that 99th percentile, I mean, you're going to be competitive for every college and you're going to win, hundreds of thousands of dollars in scholarships. So that's really where we try to get students to.
I remember really vague instructions when I was taking this test where they're like, you can guess if you want, or you can skip the question. And I don't remember which was more beneficial, but they're like, if you miss it, it's, negative two, but if you skip it, it's negative one or whatever it was.
Yeah, so that's an interesting concept you bring up because back when you and I took the SAT, they did penalize you for wrong answers. But now they good news for students today, they don't penalize you for wrong answers. So they you don't have to have complex guessing strategies. That used to be something as you're alluding to. But now I just encourage students to at least put an answer down for every single question because you may get it right. And it's multiple choice. So if you guess correctly, you'll add points to your score and it will not detract any points like it used to if you get it wrong.
Oh, fantastic. Because that was like, oh boy, do I guess on this one and take the risky chance?
So that exactly. That used to be like a huge, huge thing in the test prep industry. So I'm very happy that the SAT and the ACT have gotten rid of that. There's no penalty for wrong answers.
Nice. So, are there any other tips and tricks? Obviously, a lot of this has to come down to hard work, right? You're like, you have to put in the work to learn the questions, to know the answers. You can't just, walk in and assume you've got this. Are there any like other tips and tricks outside of like hard work and studying?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton. Probably, each one takes like 15, 20 minutes to explain, but I could explain, at least I could give an example for the listeners on what do I mean by strategies, techniques, and tips that'll help you ace these exams. So one of the strategies that I teach at Prep Expert to our students and our tutors teach is for the grammar questions of the SAT, ACT, and PSAT. There's a strategy we teach in which the word being, BEING, is always incorrect on any grammar question on these standardized tests. So if you see the word being, you can cross that answer choice out. Why? Because being often creates passive voice constructions. And I'm not going to get into the differences between passive voice and active voice right now, but this is what I mean. Just to give a quick tip for anyone taking a standardized test, the word being is always incorrect. And I bring up this kind of tip because one, it's easy to learn. Everyone can remember it. But two, it's something that you likely didn't learn in your English classes, right? And so this is what I mean is you need to know a lot of content strategies and techniques that you may not have learned in your high school English classes that will really help you ace these exams. Because how helpful is it now to parents and students listening that if you see the word being, oh, that's not the right answer. You've just improved your odds significantly on tons of questions on the SAT, ACT, and PSAT. So hopefully that's helpful to give that kind of example.
Yeah, certainly. So, hopefully people come to Prep Expert. They're like, okay, I've learned, I've done really well on the test, I've increased my score, hopefully quite a lot. Like you said, from average to very good, like the top 10% of test takers. What are the best practices from there forward? Like, should you pause and look at all of the options in front of you?
Yeah. So speaking from my own experience and what I've seen most successful students do with high test scores is you want to leverage that test score into scholarships. So what do I mean by that? You want to take that test score and you want to take your grades. Hopefully you have, good grades, A's and B's, and apply for as many scholarships as you can. So there are lots of private scholarships out there from companies like Coca-Cola, Toyota, McDonald's. You want to apply for as many as you can because you will win a lot of them. Apply for many in your local area because a lot of those won't have a lot of applications. So then you'll have a higher chance of winning those. Apply for colleges that offer merit-based scholarships. So there's many colleges that simply don't offer any merit-based scholarships like Harvard and Stanford, but a lot of smaller colleges will offer merit scholarships. So, they'll look at your test score and say, here's a half tuition scholarship, Colton, or here's a full tuition scholarship. So that's what you want to do. I actually applied for 100 scholarships my senior year. That's how I got a $500,000 myself. And so definitely, I mean, leverage it. That's all your hard work. You're going to really get a nice payoff.
Yeah. So, I mean, at that point, you're just like, which one of these schools offers the thing I want to do, for the rest of my life?
Yeah, exactly. Once you have a few offers, like for example, I had I think two or three full tuition and two half tuition scholarship offers at multiple universities. Then it's all about which university do you want to go to. I really think base your college decision as a financial decision because now more than ever, I mean, student debt is hitting $1.7 trillion. Try to go to a university that's like for example, I got into the Ivy League, but they didn't give me any scholarships, so I didn't end up going there. I took a full ride scholarship to USC, which is a great school as well. But that was the right decision for me because I avoided $250,000 in loans, didn't have to go in any student debt. So really, look at all your offers, decide which universities have given you a good financial aid or scholarship package, which ones maybe didn't, and th maybe throw those to the side. Would be my recommendation because, prestigious stuff is great, but at the end of the day, you don't want to sink into a ton of student debt.
Well, and that kind of, brings up an interesting point because everyone says like, oh, you have an Ivy League school on your resume, but at the end of the day, like you have the same degree as everybody else, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of how I feel about it, even though, I run a test prep company and many of my students do go to Ivy Leagues and all that. I personally feel that it's more important simply to get a college degree than it is to go to a prestigious university because education is becoming more similar across, the internet, across colleges and universities. Information is accessible. I know there's the whole argument about should you even go to college or not, but all of the data still shows that college graduates have higher earning potential and earn over $1 million more over the course of their lifetimes than non-college graduates. Of course, I know that there are plenty of people out there who don't have college degrees who have been successful. And, kudos to you if you can be one of those people. But I'm talking about the law of averages. On average, people who have college degrees earn more. And so I'm not saying, go into $200,000 of student debt to go to college. I'm saying, get the most scholarships you can, the best financial aid package. If you have to go to community college or junior college for 2 years and maybe transfer, lower your cost of college, make a smart financial decision, but go to college because it does, at the end of the day, increase your earning potential overall.
Well, certainly. And that's kind of one of the arguments people throw out now, especially with the increased cost of schooling, like we had talked about, that they're like, yeah, you make more, but you've also spent way more to get here. And the caveat to that is, unless you did really well on your standardized testing, in which case, like, you might not have paid for it at all.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to calculate that into the ROI. It's like, don't pay the sticker price. That's everything. Everyone gets shocked by sticker prices, right? The sticker price of college tuition is like $50,000 or $70,000 a year. That's crazy. Yes, that is crazy. And don't pay that, but make a smart financial decision around it. And like you said, if you're able to leverage your test score into scholarships like I did, and thousands of my students have, then it's like it's a no-brainer. Why would you not if you're going for free?
Absolutely. So, I mean, you've established this business quite well over the last how many years now?
We're coming up on, I did 13, 14 years now. I registered the business 2010. I taught my first course in 2011. So yeah, 13, 14 years.
Wow. Congratulations on that. And like you said, in a very competitive industry at that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, but what I love about the business is we get to do good and do well. What I mean by that is we do good by helping parents and families raise their test scores, get into college, and lower their cost of college. And we do well because I get to provide for myself, my employees, my tutors. We've got over 80 people working at the company, which is great.
And you finally got to write the book you wanted to write when you started.
Yes. Yeah. We I almost forgot to mention, I just released a brand new book. It's called Prep Expert Digital SAT Playbook: Winning Strategies to Achieve Your Dream Score. And this is fully updated for the new digital SAT that just came out in 2024. Everyone thinks, oh, the exam just went from paper to digital. It's the same stuff, so I can use the old SAT books and courses. That's not true because there's brand new question types, brand new format, brand new content. So I'm really excited. I've released this new book and I'm getting amazing reviews in the first few thousand copies we sold last month. So really, really excited to help tens of thousands of students, hopefully 100,000 students, and achieve that $1 billion scholarship mission by helping students win scholarships by raising their test scores.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people out there, reasonably, right, are not authors, so they don't understand that this is like when we say the most competitive, like people don't break into this industry very often. So for your book to become so successful, and this is like a huge deal, I think that's why I hype it up because I'm like, this is a crazy category to break into. Like a lot of authors are like, I'm going to avoid this like the plague because it's so hard.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it is very, very, I put my poured my heart and soul into this book. My first book, I probably spent 1,000 hours, but since my first book came out like 10 years ago, I've now spent 10,000 hours optimizing this book, optimizing the curriculum. It's one of the reasons, like you said, it is so competitive, and I'm very grateful we were able to hit number one on SAT prep during launch week. I think we're down to like number 20 on Amazon. So hopefully a lot of the listeners will go to Amazon and help us get back to number one with Prep Expert Digital SAT Playbook.
Absolutely. And if you do pick up the book, please leave a 5-star review. That is crucially important to the algorithm. People are, like you could sell 10 times more copies than the next person, but if you have no reviews, like nobody's seeing your book.
Yeah, 100%. So thank you for that. And I'm really grateful for, all the good reviews we've already gotten, but excited to hopefully get thousands more.
Yeah, hopefully. You also have one other very interesting experience that I think is very cool. It's not necessarily tied to, learning the SAT or anything, but you were on Shark Tank.
So that was probably the highlight of Prep Expert in my company is in 2016, I pitched my company, the SAT company, Prep Expert, on Shark Tank, and I closed an investment with Mark Cuban. He invested $250,000 for 20% equity in the company. The deal went through, and he's been an amazing investor, advocate, and partner for the company. Shark Tank was really a life-changing experience. It 10x'd the business. It really 10x'd my life. I'm so grateful for having that exposure on the show. And I'm very grateful for Mark Cuban being my business partner now.
Yeah, well, and that's fantastic, to get somebody, into business with you that has so much knowledge and experience. How was the preparing for that show? Because that's very different than preparing for the standardized test.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Preparing for the show is definitely different than preparing for a standardized test, but there's still a lot of hard work and preparation, just like the SAT or ACT. I spent probably over 200 hours preparing to pitch on Shark Tank. I analyzed every question they could ask me, wrote out what my responses would be. I watched previous episodes kind of to angle, made sure I had good stories to tell, all of that stuff. It was definitely nerve-wracking being on the show, but everyone just sees the 10 or 15 minutes of a Shark Tank pitch on television. But in reality, I was in the tank for about an hour and a half, and then they edit it down to the most interesting 10 or 15 minutes for TV.
Oh, that's crazy. I did not know it's like an hour and a half of sitting there like pitching, really hard, I imagine, to these people.
Yeah, everyone's like, "Why are you sweating in 10 or 15 minutes?" Like, no, I was sweating over an hour and a half of having to field all these questions.
Like I'm getting blasted by studio lights, I'm getting hit with hard questions, I'm trying to remember all the things I've prepared. That's a long, like if you had to present for an hour and a half, that's a grueling presentation too.
It was definitely difficult, but I was just adrenaline was pumping and time just flew by.
That's awesome. Well, and you kind of followed your own thing there where you're like, I prepared 200 hours worth of stuff for this. You came out with over $1,000 an hour on that preparation. So.
Yeah, that's true. That's what the numbers were always trying to hit, whether it's standardized tests or Shark Tank.
Fantastic. Well, Sean, thank you so much for being here. This has been incredible, and I've appreciated your time immensely.
Yeah, thanks, Colton, for having me. This was great. And for any parents or students out there who are looking for SAT courses, ACT courses, college admissions consulting, or my books, you can find us at prepexpert.com. I hope to help a lot of parents and students who are listening.
Of course. And anyone listening, Prep Expert, if you want a quick link, will be in the show notes. I will also include a link to the book. Remember, 5-star reviews, that really helps.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
I really hope someone discovers that they can go to school because of this episode. I never knew there were such great scholarships just within reach, or I might have followed a different path through schooling. In other news, April is over and rankings didn't change at all from last week. Number one, the United States, still led by New York, California, and Texas. Number two, England of the United Kingdom. Number three, Australia, with South Australia still at the top. Number four, Canada, with Ontario out in the lead. And number five, Ghana, still beating all of the other regulars. That's it for this week. Have a great week. A great weekend, and I'll see you all back here next week for another new episode. Until the next episode, pretty please do all those things that help the show grow, like rating, reviewing, liking, and subscribing. Remember, you can reach out to dumbenoughpodcast@gmail.com or on any of the social medias if you want to reach me personally. But most importantly, stay dumb.